You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 12th of July 2019, Friday, the last day of the trading week. All that took place on Dalal Street, I've already told you, on an evening walk down Dalal Street. But there are other things outside of Dalal Street as well, and that is precisely what I bring to you each day in about 25 minutes on Stories of the Day. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
Let's start with some earnings news. Software services provider Infosys's June quarter profit fell 6.8% sequentially, but raised its full-year constant currency revenue guidance to 8.5% to 10%. Profit for the quarter ended June 2019 stood at 3,802 crore rupees, down from 4,078 crore rupees in the March quarter. Revenue in rupee terms grew by 1.2% quarter-on-quarter to 21,803 crore rupees. Dollar revenue showed a 2.3% sequential growth at $3,131 million, and constant currency revenue growth came in line with street estimates at 2.8%. Salil Parekh, who is the CEO and MD, said, and I quote, "We had a strong start to FY20 with constant currency growth accelerating to 12.4% on a year-on-year basis and digital revenue growth of 41.9%. This was achieved through our consistent client focus and investments, which have strengthened our client relationships," unquote. Consequently, Infosys increased its FY20 revenue growth guidance range to 8.5% to 10% in constant currency from 7.5% to 9.5% earlier, and maintained operating margin guidance range of 21% to 23%. According to a report on Reuters, the government has plans to raise as much as 3.25 trillion rupees in the next 5 years by reducing its stakes in some large state-owned firms to 40%. Two senior government officials have told Reuters. This will be the nation's biggest privatization push in more than two decades. Last week, Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman, in her budget, announced that the government will look to reduce direct controlling stakes in some state-run firms on a case-by-case basis, about which we had already spoken. The plan will open up a steady stream of state companies to greater private investment and target the kind of annual divestment revenue that will be crucial to meet fiscal deficit targets. Prime Minister Modi's administration has already sold government stakes in a host of companies and raised $40.92 billion in his first-year term, nearly three times the divestment proceeds of $14.52 billion achieved by UPA2 between 2009 and 2014. The government has identified a number of state-owned firms like Oil and Natural Gas Corporation, that is ONGC, IOC, GAIL, NHPC, NTPC, NMDC and Coal India, and Bharat Heavy Electricals, said the sources, who declined to be named because of the sensitive nature of this matter. How this evolves, we will of course keep you updated. PTI has reported that Dutch bankruptcy administrator today moved the NCLAT on the Jet Airways matter, which has agreed to hear the case. A three-member NCLAT bench headed by Chairman Justice S.J. Mukhopadhyay also asked the Dutch bankruptcy administrator to assist in the insolvency proceedings of Jet Airways going on in India. Dutch Insolvency Court Administrator has agreed before the NCLAT to not sell the confiscated assets of debt-ridden Jet Airways. NCLAT has also issued notice to the consortium of Jet Airways lenders, directing them to file their reply within 2 weeks. In some good news, India lifted 271 million people out of poverty between 2006 and 2016, recording the fastest reductions in the multidimensional poverty index values during the period, with strong improvements in areas like assets, cooking fuel, sanitation, and nutrition. This, according to a report by the United Nations. The 2019 Global Multidimensional Poverty Index, or the MPI, from the UN Development Programme, the Oxford Poverty and Human Development Initiative, that is OPHI, was released yesterday. The report said that in the 101 countries studied, 31 low-income, 68 middle-income and 2 high-income, 1.3 billion people are multidimensionally poor, which means that poverty is defined not just by income, but a number of other indicators like poor health, poor quality of work, and the threat of violence. The report identified 10 countries with a combined population of around 2 billion people to illustrate the level of poverty reduction. The 10 countries are Bangladesh, Cambodia, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Ethiopia, Haiti, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, Peru, and Vietnam. The report said that within these countries, data shows that 270 million people moved out of multidimensional poverty from one survey to the next. Apple's top-end iPhones assembled in India by Foxconn's local unit are likely to hit Indian stores next month, according to one source, potentially helping Apple drop prices in the world's second biggest smartphone market, that is India. Some approvals are pending, but the India-made iPhone XR and XS devices are expected to hit the market by August, according to this source, and Apple did not immediately respond to a request for comment from Reuters. Now, Foxconn also said it does not comment on customers or their products. Expanding local assembly will, of course, help Apple save on high taxes levied on the import of fully built devices. And we might also just about see more manufacturing of Apple devices, especially iPhones here in India, considering about 15 to 20% of their manufacturing in China. Apple has decided to move to other countries, with India being one of the destinations they have chosen. India's market regulator, SEBI, is probing whether Interglobe Aviation CEO Ronojoy Dutta downplayed the fight going on between the promoters, that is Bhatia and Gangwal, in IndiGo. The spat between Rakesh Gangwal and Rahul Bhatia has, of course, escalated after Gangwal on Tuesday alleged violations of corporate governance rules at the parent group and asked SEBI to intervene. But we had reported that Ronojoy Dutta, only recently in an interview with CNBC TV18, had said that this is due to related party transactions and nothing more, and everything is going to be sorted out. But now there is going to be a probe on whether Ronojoy Dutta downplayed this tussle. Bloomberg has reported that Prime Minister Modi's administration has asked global warship makers to submit proposals to build 6 conventional submarines in India to boost local shipyard capability and plug gaps in the Navy's underwater warfare fleet. France's Naval Group SA, German ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems, Swedish Saab Kockums, Spanish Navantia and Russian Rosoboron Export have been asked to show if they can transfer technology to build the diesel-electric powered submarines in India, people familiar with the matter said in New Delhi, according to this report by Bloomberg. The request for expression of interest to the foreign companies were issued earlier this month, but the award of contract could take at least 3 years. New York-based hedge fund Tiger Global Management is looking at a $1.5 billion valuation for its 21% stake sale in eTech Aces, which owns Policybazaar and Paisabazaar. This, according to a report on the Times of India. Sources have told the paper that the investment firm has pegged the deal size at $300 million. We have not been able to independently verify this report. Among the possible suitors are Chinese internet giant Tencent and Japan's SoftBank Vision Fund. SoftBank had invested in the company last year at a $1 billion valuation, but the secondary sale is expected to be valued higher than that. Since 2014, Tiger Global has, of course, invested around $50 to $60 million in this parent company across several rounds. The proposed stake sale would therefore mean another bumper exit for the company. Last year, it earned over $3 billion following its exit from e-commerce giant Flipkart, as we know. This was also followed by a partial exit from Ola. The country's largest lender, State Bank of India, has waived off charges on funds transfers made via RTGS and NEFT for its YONO, that is YONO, internet and mobile banking customers from the 1st of July. The bank will also give free access to IMPS for the same set of customers from the 1st of August. Railways Minister Piyush Goyal on Friday said there was no question of privatization of the railways, but said the ministry will invite investments for new lines and projects in national interest. Addressing the Lok Sabha on the issue of demands for grants of the railways, Goyal said track kilometre grew from 77,609 kilometres to 89,919 kilometres from 1950 to 2014 and rose to 1,23,236 kilometres in just the past 5 years. He also said railway budgets, which were earlier presented in Parliament, were designed to mislead the public and show them dreams about new trains for political gains. During the Congress rule, not one coach was manufactured in Raebareli's modern coach factory, one of the production units of which will be corporatized, he went on to say. One of the major takeaways of Nirmala Sitharaman's budget was, of course, taxing the super rich. And in a new interview that she's given to the Hindustan Times, she has gone on to say, and I quote, "We will have to see when the timing is proper to bring this down." According to her, ideally, the peak income tax rate of 42.7% should come down over time. Ideally, was repeated by her several times. Sitharaman also said that the tax on the super rich enforced in the budget announced on the 5th of July was driven by the need to part raise resources for important and essential government expenditure. The super rich tax, which took the form of a surcharge of 25% on the tax of people who earn between 2 and 5 crore rupees and 37% on those who earn over 5 crore rupees, has of course roiled the Indian stock markets after it emerged that around 40% of foreign portfolio investors route their investments into India through trusts which attract the same tax as individuals. Private sector lender IndusInd Bank has reported healthy growth in the June quarter earnings following merger with Bharat Financial Inclusion. Net profit of the merged entity stood at 1,432.5 crore rupees for the quarter ended June, rising 38.3% compared to 1,036 crore rupees in the corresponding period last year. Net interest margin also improved to 4.05% from 3.59% in the previous quarter. Of course, these results might be a little skewed considering, of course, the merger. In a Money Control exclusive, Ashwin Mohan has reported that Kerala-based South Indian Bank is looking to offer minority stake to a private equity investor in the coming months as the lender looks to fulfill its 2020 vision of becoming a retail banking powerhouse. This, according to multiple sources with knowledge of the matter. One of the sources said, and I quote, "The management is open to the idea of raising capital by divesting a minority stake in the company to a strong, long-term focused private equity investor. These plans are at a nascent stage and the route has not been finalized yet." Another source went on to say South Indian Bank needs capital and would look at raising at least 300 crore rupees to grow its retail and MSME book, unquote. Private equity firm Chris Capital's investment arm Lavender Investments holds 4.91% stake in the bank. Other investors are Polaris Capital Management and International Value Advisors, that is IVA. Meanwhile, India's retail inflation has marginally accelerated to 3.18% in June from 3.05% a month ago, and India's factory output has decreased, that is decelerated, to 3.1% in May from a revised 4.1% a month ago. This according to data released by the Statistics Department. This, of course, augurs well for another round of rate cut by the central bank in its policy review next month after the budget stuck to the path of fiscal consolidation, as reported by Mint. In other quick roundup of other business stories doing the rounds across the country, the government may mobilize 70,000 crore rupees from issuance of sovereign bonds abroad, according to Subhash Chandra Garg. US-India bilateral trade to reach $238 billion by 2025, says a new report. DGCA has found safety lapses by Indigo and has issued notices to four executives in Indigo. Proposed model tenancy law, housing ministry will be approaching the cabinet for approval. The rupee today took a dive of about 25 paise to close at 68.69 against the dollar. And RBI is examining priority sector lending norms for export credit, this according to Mr. Goyal. All right, business news done. Let's find out what else has been happening in the country. And of course, all eyes are trained on Karnataka. Chief Minister H.D. Kumaraswamy has said that he was ready to seek a trust vote to prove his majority on the floor of the House and has asked the Speaker to fix a time. After that statement, each party, that is the Congress and the JDS in this coalition and the opposition BJP, have arranged to move their lawmakers to resorts to prevent, well, poaching attempts or, well, horse trading. Kumaraswamy said as the budget session began in the Vidhan Sabha, and I quote, "I have decided to seek trust vote. Please fix time for it. I am ready for everything. I am not here to stick to power." The Speaker, Ramesh Kumar, said a slot for the trust vote will be allotted whenever the Chief Minister opts for it. He went on to say, "Whenever he tells me that he wants to move that trust motion, the very next day I will put it in the business of the day." Unquote. The Congress-JDS coalition, which has been struggling, as we've been reporting every day, is facing a collapse after 18 resignations took place over the last week. If these resignations are accepted, the ruling coalition could slip below the halfway mark and the BJP will have a majority. As of now, these rebel MLAs have been staying at a five-star hotel in Mumbai. The Congress has decided to move its MLAs to Clark's Exotica Conventions Resorts. The BJP has three resorts in their mind. JDS lawmakers are already in resort. So it is resort politics all over again in Karnataka. The coalition did win a bit of a victory from the Supreme Court that until Tuesday, there would be no decision on the resignations. The court said, and I quote, "In view of the weighty issues that have arisen, we are of the view that the matter be considered by us on Tuesday, that is the 16th of July. We are of the view that the status quo as of today with regard to the prevailing situation be maintained. Neither the issue of resignation nor that of disqualification be decided till Tuesday," unquote. Meanwhile, West Bengal Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee has asked Karnataka's H.T. Kumaraswamy to hold his ground and not give in to the efforts of the BJP. Banerjee, stung by defections herself, with several TMC MPs and MLAs joining the BJP, called the Karnataka Chief Minister last evening and spoke to him about the crisis in the state. This according to sources that spoke to PTI. They said it was during this conversation that Banerjee suggested that a protest by opposition parties should be held in the parliament today. It was decided that the protest should be led by some other party than the Congress, as the Grand Old Party, which is itself undergoing a leadership crisis, it might fail to unite the opposition, according to sources. Trinamool Congress lawmakers then started calling up leaders of the opposition parties. A source said Mamata Banerjee called up Kumaraswamy around 6:30 p.m. and discussed the situation in the state. It was then that a plan was drawn, unquote. The Congress JDS government is, of course, in turmoil, and TMC is also in a bit of a turmoil after several defections. India news done. Let's turn to financial markets elsewhere and find out what's happening on Wall Street first. U.S. stock futures are pointing to a higher Wall Street open today after the Dow eclipsed and then closed above 27,000 for the first time ever. The S&P 500, after breaking above 3,000 this week during the trading day, closed just a fraction below that level on Thursday, but still at record levels. The gains were driven by expectations of yet another Fed interest rate cut later this month, insulating the stock market from a slowing economy and, of course, the ongoing trade war with China. President Trump today has said he's not a fan of cryptocurrencies, suggesting that Facebook may need a banking charter if the company wants to launch its Libra. In, of course, a series of tweets, Trump said cryptocurrencies are not money and unregulated crypto assets can facilitate unlawful behavior, including drug trade and other illegal activity. This according to his tweets and according to a report on CNBC. Meanwhile, Mark Cuban also calls Facebook's Libra a big mistake, saying it could be dangerous. Returning to Trump one more time, he will no longer be seeking to include the citizenship question on the 2020 census, as he is backed down from the high-profile legal battle in a rather rare concession of defeat. This, of course, comes 2 weeks after the Supreme Court effectively blocked this measure, and Trump followed this up by saying that his administration would find a way. Initially, his Attorney General, William Barr, said there was a way that they were working on, and then Trump also threatened that there would be an executive order to the same effect, but apparently now he says he's not seeking to include this question. The Trump of Brazil has moved what can only be described as a Trumpian move, because Bolsonaro of Brazil, has appointed his own son as the U.S. ambassador. The far-right Brazilian president's decision underscored his family's rather outsized role in the country's diplomacy and domestic politics. Eduardo Bolsonaro, currently a congressman, has strong ties to the Trump administration and, of course, the American far right. So, just like Trump has appointed his own daughter and son-in-law into key positions, it's the same thing in Brazil with Bolsonaro. Singapore's economy has unexpectedly shrunk. It shrank 3.4% in the second quarter compared to the first 3 months of the year and missed forecasts of modest growth by a wide margin. Its year-on-year growth was 0.1%, which was also the lowest in a decade. In contrast, China did better than expected. Exports fell less than forecast to 1.3% in June, but second quarter GDP data released on Monday is anticipated to show economic growth slowing to its weakest pace in almost 3 decades, and not least because of the trade war that is going on between the two biggest economies in the world. Speaking of losses and slowing down, the German automaker behind Mercedes-Benz, that is Daimler, has posted a $1.8 billion operating loss in the second quarter, which was the result of a mass airbag recall as well as legal costs related to the Dieselgate emissions scandal. The company also slashed its 2019 profit outlook for a second time. In a quick roundup of tech news from around the world, Amazon has admitted that automation will replace many workers' jobs. We spoke yesterday that Amazon is going to spend $700 million to retain and retrain about 100,000 workers in the US by 2025. Amazon says it aims to give warehouse workers the opportunity to learn technical skills like software engineering, which could lead to better jobs at Amazon or, indeed, other firms. The Times of New York, that is, points out that this is an acknowledgement that advances in automation technology will handle many tasks now done by people. In May, if you recall, we had spoken about this. Reuters had reported that Amazon had started implementing machines to automate boxing orders. Each machine is able to replace at least 24 human workers. Now, Walmart, on the other hand, says its new robots will make employees happier. Walmart will soon have robots for tasks including floor cleaning, shelf scanning, delivery sorting. Vox has gone on to say, and I quote, "This is the paradox of automation. Because sure, it's not fun to carry out these boring and repetitive tasks, but we can see that people like to be employed and make enough money to live. You might crib about your job, but it is still a job that pays you money, and therefore that is the paradox of automation." So now, $700 million to retain and retrain these workers might just be because of, well, you don't have a job here in Amazon anymore, go and try a job elsewhere. We spoke about this a little bit yesterday, that France is going to be imposing a new big tech tax, which means the country will tax tech companies 3%. It is expected to bring in 400 million euros, or as much as $450 million in revenue in 2019. That should tell you that the earnings of these companies in this country exceed 40 billion. The law applies to digital platforms which connect users in transactions, as well as digital advertising services which collect data, meaning that Airbnb and Uber, in addition to Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook, will also face this particular tax. So Facebook is trying to be more transparent. It has a new transparency tool which tells you why a certain ad was sent to you and how you can opt out of it, which is, of course, good news. The bad news, as BuzzFeed has pointed out, is that looking at it may end up just making you feel worse about how your data is passed around by third-party data brokers, credit reporting bureaus, marketing agencies, etc., just like Halloween candy. They know everything about you, and whatever they find interesting, they just keep sharing it between these companies. This new tool shares more information than what Facebook had previously disclosed about how it targets ads. It had said a few things, but what it actually gives to these companies is a whole lot more. And they had said it was just age and location data. But you can actually see there is so much more that is given out to these companies. You know, yesterday we spoke, there was a social media summit in the White House when Trump invited, well, not Twitter, not Facebook, not Google, not YouTube, not any of those social media platforms that actually matter, but a whole bunch of right-wing conservative thinkers, if you can call them that, and some meme makers and so on and so forth. And it was a hilarious interaction. I think it is worth checking out the things that he said. He spoke about several things like his hair, spoke about several things like he should have millions more of followers, except there was shadow banning, as he called it, which means the prioritization of these conservative stories don't always show them on search engines, which is, of course, based on the fact that search engines have certain criteria for racism and harassment and bigotry and all of these measures, and posts that are filled with these things don't turn up right at the top. And if they're not turning at the top, it should tell you that these commentaries and these memes and these articles have something problematic about them. But that was, of course, that nuance was, of course, lost in this company. It was overall a rather funny event. Among the several things he said at that conference was also that he was an extremely good speller, which we all know is not true. But he had a reason for why he's a bad speller, because, well, his brain is very fast and the fingers don't keep up. That's the problem with the spelling, okay? It's nothing else. At the summit, of course, Trump went on to say he was being blacklisted by Facebook, and he accused them of censoring him and other conservative commentators during that summit. Speaking of Facebook, Netflix has just dropped the trailer for its documentary about the Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal. This documentary is called The Great Hack, and it features journalist Carol Cadwalder, who broke the story, as well as Cambridge Analytica whistleblower Brittany Kaiser. So that trailer is out. We will, of course, keep you updated about when the picture itself will be out. If you love sneakers and you thought you were the only one, do not worry. Sneakers is big money, especially in auctions these days. Sotheby's in New York has announced yesterday its first ever auction dedicated to sneakers. Sotheby's is teaming up with streetwear marketplace Stadium Goods to auction 100 pairs of the rarest sneakers ever produced. And one of the rarest is Nike's Moon Shoe. And that is estimated for about $160,000. Only 12 pairs of the Nike Moon Shoe were created. It was designed by Nike's co-founder and track coach Bill Bowman for runners at the 1972 Olympic trials, and the pair up for auction is in fact handmade. Other sneakers include 2011 and 2016 versions of the Back to the Future Part 2 limited edition shoes by Nike, which were of course inspired by the 1989 film Back to the Future Part 2. The 2016 version of this futuristic show, complete with like self-lacing technology, is expected to go anywhere between $50,000 and $70,000. So if you thought you spent about 3,000 or 4,000 rupees and you thought that was too much for sneakers, fear not. There are people worse than you. A Lithuanian couple have won the World Wife Carrying Championship for a second time in a row in a Finnish town last Saturday. This is, of course, a contest where men complete an obstacle course with their wives slung over their shoulders. Each year, the championship draws thousands of visitors to the town in Finland. It has only 4,000 people. And last Saturday's competition was, of course, the 24th year that it had been held. Having gained followers across the world, preliminary competitions were held in countries like the US, Australia, Poland, and Britain. And the same couple that won it last year won it this time as well, but by the slimmest of margins, just 0.1 seconds. All right, before I let you go, let's find out what happened on Dalal Street. The BSE Sensex fell by about 2% and Nifty 50 saw a decline of 2.1% for the week. Ended July 12th, the index failed to hold on to 11,600 levels, but got some support near 11,500. It closed above its 100-day EMA, which is, of course, a comforting sign. In terms of sectors, metal did well. Realty was up as well as healthcare index, which was up 0.5%. That's it. Those are all the big stories that you needed to know from India and around the world. And we'll, of course, be back on Monday with a morning walk down Dalal Street and stock picks for you to choose from and digging deeper and stories of the day and everything else. Here is wishing you a very, very good weekend ahead. And hopefully you'll get some time to catch up with friends and family, relax, read a book, sleep, you know, how much we love sleeping. But with the promise that I will return soon, and of course, request that you should write to us, mcpodcast@nw18.com, or leave us a comment wherever it is that you listen to us. This is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.